everyone. My name is Sam Huff, and this is the QU Student Podcast on the QU Media Podcast Network. We are here in Studio Q today at North Campus. It is a beautiful, sunny day on Tuesday, March 7th, and I'm here alongside with my co-host, Taryn Sargent. What we're just going to be going through today is some of the stories that are on QUmedia.net or upcoming stories that should be posted by next week. So Taryn, would you like to start with your story or do you want me to go?
Sure. I have two stories that should be hitting the website, and that's QUmedia.net, and that should be coming out pretty soon. The first one is you may have heard on campus, you may have not, because it is posted on the respective team's like social media pages, is we unfortunately do have national qualifiers for both swimming and track that are not able to go to the national meet. This is because they did not make the minimum amount of members needed in order to go to the meet. For track, it is 10, and for swimming, there's another respective number, and both teams did not make that number. They submitted appeals through Taylor Zerbe, and both appeals were denied. There also was, in that situation, there also was the same situation with women's wrestling. They also submitted an appeal, but that was accepted. So the women's wrestling athlete is going to be able to go to nationals. But that is because women's wrestling is not yet an official NCAA sport. It is just NCAA sponsored. And it is also classified as an up-and-coming sport, which means it does get a little bit more lax when it comes to the rules because there is that up-and-coming title. So that's going to be quite interesting to see how the teams kind of deal with that and if they can get enough numbers by their next season in order to give those athletes the chance to really, even though they already have been showcasing their talents, to really go to a bigger stage to continue their success.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, a little bit of luck for women's wrestling on that side, but it is really unfortunate for the decisions for track and swimming. And honestly, I mean, I don't know about you, I kind of think of it as a letdown by the NCAA, at least on the aspect of, yes, track has been here for a little bit, but still, obviously, with our facilities and everything, it's a small, still on the smaller side of the program. I mean, we don't even have a true track and field for you guys yet, which is unfortunate. But on the NCAA side, if you have programs like the swimming team that are putting up national qualifiers in their year one, why would you try and take that away from them? Like, wouldn't that just be good? Wouldn't that be good for the sport anyway, that first year programs are making that competitive edge?
I think the only way that I personally would be able to see that is I think that they have that rule in place because of the fact that you only get certain amount of scholarship for each sport, and that's for also for each gender. So let's say I have a really phenomenal sprinter or a really phenomenal thrower or a swimmer in a certain event, and I really want them, and I know they can already make national qualifying coming out of high school. Well, it's not really fair if you just use all your scholarships. Everyone's on a full ride, so everyone's the best athlete they can be, and you don't really have a team. You just have a group of individuals. And obviously that you want to have it where it's more like balanced, if that makes sense. So I think that's what the rule is kind of trying to stop. But at the same time, like I see where you're coming from where it's like, oh, this is a small school anyway. So for you to have 10, 12, 15 people on one side, which is because, you know, the genders are separate when it comes to the NCAA, that is does make it a little bit difficult to kind of see where the NCAA is coming from.
Yeah, and I agree with that statement too. Just for devil's advocate a little bit, I mean, for swimming specifically, I mean, the whole entire sport, yeah, there's team races, but it's really individualized like track is in some instances. So I feel like for that argument's sake, like the individual proved that he's a national qualifier, that individual should not get punished for team eligibility wise, which I think it was an iffy answer anyway. I didn't know if you did also see the coaches for the swimming program made a Twitter post kind of addressing the, wouldn't say allegations, but the situation that placed them on hand. And they got a lot of buzz from it. They had over 915,000 views from that tweet alone. So either way, it is unfortunate that the call didn't go their way, but at least they got a really good message out there and got people kind of in tune of like, hey, these are some issues that can happen with the NCAA. And I think a lot of people kind of gathered around that.
And another way to kind of look on the bright side is, I do not know about the swimmer, but I do know Peyton Lewis, which is the individual from track and field that did make it to nationals, but is not going to be able to go. He is submitting through the NCAA compliance to try to get his eligibility back for this past indoor season because he was not able to go to nationals. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that is going to be accepted or denied, that is something that we have to stay tuned for, and hopefully that will be in the story when it is released. But we are hoping for his sake that it does get accepted and he maybe gets that eligibility back so he can try again.
Yeah, wishing him the best of luck in that process. Unfortunately, I feel like it might be kind of a tall uphill battle, especially against the NCAA and my experiences with them in their compliance office. But I think totally valid. I mean, you put up national numbers and you're not able to cash in on that. I mean, that feels like a year wasted. I think that's fully deserved that he should try and get that year back.
Yeah, and then another story that is also going to be coming out under myself is about the track facilities. Now, this kind of segues from the not being able to nationally qualify. Obviously, we here at Quincy University, we do not have a track and field. We practice on the rubber courts in the downstairs area of the HFC, which is not meant to be, obviously, a track has a different type of surface. It's some, depending on the type of track, it can either be a Mondo track and stuff like that. Those surfaces are meant for track and field. The rubber courts are not meant for running. And the walking track upstairs is unfortunately not to standard at all, and it does not have as many lanes, and it is considered a walking track because of the fact that the turns are too sharp. If a runner is to run on a walking track, they would obviously incur a lot of injuries, especially in the knees and ankles, because the turns are way too sharp to try to sprint around. So this upcoming article just kind of talks about a couple of the details of how the track team does function, some things that has happened because of lack of facilities, and overall what the track and field members think about the lack of facilities and how that has a way and an impact on how they think and when they go into season.
Yeah, well, I think that'd be a very riveting story to see next week. I think it perfectly goes hand in hand with the issues that track have had, specifically with NCAA national qualifier. I mean, I personally really feel bad for you and your team. Ever since I've been here, I mean, you guys are the only team that have proven to give the school a national champion, and you guys simply can't get the basic necessities to properly train, which I think is really unfortunate. I mean, yeah, is it ingenuity, I guess you could say, for them making Friars Field into your track? Sure. But also, like, why do you guys not get rewards for bringing home silverware, aka extra money for the program or the school, and larger teams, which, yes, it is because of the numbers, but larger teams by football and baseball have new developments in plan every couple so years. So I really think that it is make or break time for the school deciding on if they want to keep track here, because you're continually making those student athletes disinterested in this university, as they should. I mean, there's really, and from an outside view, it looks like there's not really a substantial amount of support that the school wants to give this program.
I think that plays on a bigger issue that we have here at QU. It's not just track and field. There are so many different facilities that need to be not only updated but built. Track and field is just one that needs to be built, period. But then you look at like how there used to be cracks on the tennis court, and you've got all these different issues that line up with the facilities we do have. It is a question of how is Quincy going to get the money to really just not even build but maintain what they already do have. And I think that's something that everyone is going to have to look at, whether that be athletics, admissions, everything, because obviously you need more people coming to the school to obviously get that revenue and to have even have a chance. So it's a question of if one doesn't do one thing, then the other can't do the next. So I don't know what Quincy University is going to do, but hopefully QUTV can be there to report about it and hopefully maybe point and shine a light on a solution.
Yeah, I hope so too. I mean, honestly, with all those organizations, and like an example of just off the top of what I'm thinking of, I mean, it would hurt their admissions. I mean, track, you mentioned the tennis team before. I could also say the soccer team. They probably make up the – as well as volleyball, but they probably make up the majority of our international students. And what message are you giving to these international students who have taken a whim of chance going across the world to visit Quincy University? Very lucky to have them as students. And you prove to, and you keep showing them year after year in their sport that, like, hey, we're not really going to give you that backing for your sport, even though you just made the commitment.
Yeah. So there is a lot of interesting things, and hopefully you can look and look, all of our listeners can be able to look and read. There are going to be some videos, some pictures that are also attached to those two different stories. And hopefully maybe you can blow up those comment sections and tell us how you think that QU could be improved, especially when it comes down to facilities.
Nice. Well, we really can't wait to see those on QUmedia.net next week. And really the best of your luck if you have any more research that you need to do for that. Moving on, I will explain my story from last week. It's kind of been a story that's been developing all month, so I've had a lot of updates on it. But it's initially about the train derailment that happened in East Palestine, Ohio. So for people who have not heard, which I would be surprised, but on February 3rd, 2023, a routine train shipment was derailed. It was a company... it was a train from the company Norfolk Southern. So this train derailed, leaving 35 cars misplaced, scavenged all across where the crash site happened. And 11 of these 35 tankers were traveling with hazardous chemicals. So these tankers leaked. They needed to know how they were going to get rid of it. And they ended up deciding to do a, end quote, controlled burn. Apparently this was passed or given the okay by the company and the government. And they soon started to realize with these hazardous chemicals, there could be a possible chance of toxic shock, from the controlled burn. And the toxic shock was leading to possible, I guess the word I can think of right now is radiation when it's not, but the chemical leak into the air was possibly getting into the the air, the water supply near the Ohio River, to where even 12 days after the initial crash, and they're still cleaning up, there was a report of over 3,500 fish found dead in the Ohio River near it. And so they eventually made a evacuation notice for the entire town. I also have little bit of a clip right here, courtesy of CNN news source, from a network station that was a little bit closer to the scene. So I'm just going to play that now.
Federal teams going door to door in East Palestine conducting health surveys. Over a dozen wells being drilled around the site of the spill to track where chemicals under groundwater may be moving. Only 11 train cars now remain at the crash site, those part of a federal investigation. Hundreds of air tests in homes and air monitors in town show no signs of contamination. City and private wells being continually tested also, so far, no sign of contamination.
You should have water, soil, and home testing before you move back in. Again, always paid for by Norfolk Southern. Keep your receipts. So it's up to each individual renter or homeowner what to do there, but abundance of caution is that they make the decision themselves.
But the waste and getting rid of it providing one of the more difficult hurdles so far. Soil and water left over from the toxic derailment now being shipped to two EPA-approved facilities in Ohio.
So just a little bit more explanation on some of the precautions people in the town are going around to make sure it's safe. The quote was from a Norfolk Southern PR representative. So in my personal opinion, I take that his quote a little bit with a grain of salt, as he says, there is no clear and present danger, but he also still recommends everyone to have home air and water tests. And for that, that almost just seems like they're still trying to cover it up. Obviously, we've seen in our last 100 years of this country, you can't really trust the government. So I really don't feel like the government saying, oh, there's not a clear and present danger, is that reassuring for those citizens. But anyway, that was the gist of the train derailment. My story also brings us back to QU, as the lacrosse team had a recent road trip just an hour outside of that train derailment for an entire weekend. So the lacrosse team traveled to Canton, Ohio. They had two games planned to play that weekend, one against Malone University, located in Canton, and then against Wheeling University in West Virginia, but it was still only a quick 45 miles from East Palestine. So through my interviews and also me just being there talking with the team, there was a little bit of alarm going on the entire weekend. I mean, we heard about it from the coaches, from the opposing coaches earlier in the week. We knew 3 days prior that we were going to have to stock up on purified plastic water bottles because we were told, do not trust the tap water here. They are still doing tests. So it was definitely a little bit hard to focus on the task at hand, obviously worrying about your health and thinking, man, am I here for a weekend and am I possibly going to pay for it in 20 years, you know? So it was really kind of just eye-opening and also just kind of telling, seeing how all of my teammates handled it, how they were trying to be cautious. You know, no one drank the water, no one was ordered to. Our coaches were still in contact, not only with our athletic director, but the opposing coaches to see if the water there was safe. The Malone coach reportedly told my coach, I think it was 2 days before we left for the trip, but in Canton, you were able to see the giant black smog over in East Palestine from the controlled burn that they had. So it was definitely alarming. We made it back in one piece, also got two victories on the weekend, so it was nice. And then the last bit of it is just a little bit of road trip vibes, talking about, you know, nice to get some different food, nice to relax, and it's always nice to go back on a long bus ride after you win a game. So I don't know. I really hoping for relief for the citizens in East Palestine and nearby. Obviously, they still need a lot of help, as the U.S. Secretary of Transportation, I think Buttigieg is how you pronounce it, what he said, he still needs help. And honestly, I mean, I've just been reading more from this from the last month, and there really needs to be some legislation on our transportation, especially with trains. I mean, this was the biggest one and the first one, but since this train derailment, there was four other train derailments that happened, and some of them were carrying hazardous materials. And seeing the shape of some of the railroads that we have, when it's still a very massive part of transporting hazardous materials or transporting large industrial materials, I really think and I hope that's something the government looks into now to possibly improve. And hey, maybe one day we'll have nationwide rail system that can help.
Yeah, this story is also really interesting. There's so many aspects that go into this story. Besides like your personal experience, I definitely agree with the fact that I think our railways do need to be updated. I know when I go into Chicago, I obviously take the Metra. I really enjoy the Metra, but the Metra really does take you back like 10 years. Mm-hmm. I think it's been a really long while till they've even updated the inside of the train car. So, you know, that's going to be interesting to see if they actually want to put the money into that. But what I'm really interested in, was there any of your teammates that were actually like nervous about it?
I mean, we had quite a few that were nervous. I mean, yeah, some of them were half-hearted jokes about it, but I mean, half the time when you're joking, you're kind of meaning the same thing. I mean, there were plenty of questions. Honestly, the largest question, which I thought about at times too, it was, we're in the hotel, and yeah, so we're told not to drink any of the tap water. So am I okay to shower then with the same water that's coming from the tap? Like those were a little bit of gray areas that felt, you know, just a little eerie. Overall, after that, I mean, we had two games on the flip side in 24 hours. So once that first game happened, it was kind of just us trying to recover, get this next game in, and then get out of there. But yeah, overall, and then afterwards, which I I'm not saying that these are correlated. It just was odd that we did have two or three teammates the week after with apparently severe digestive problems, like nausea, you know, some of them, you know, nausea out the back end. But yeah, there's a couple teammates who were gone for a couple of days of practice because they just couldn't, like, some of them weren't eating because they couldn't, like, they just kept, yeah. So again, do not correlate that with our time there. It just did seem a little odd on the timing afterwards.
Yeah, that is, to me, that's pretty concerning. I mean, I don't know. I wonder if they still have that area evacuated. If they're saying, oh, that there's no immediate danger, I wonder if it's still evacuated.
I've been told, at least from the sources that I've seen, that the evacuation period is over for East Palestine, and it's safe. But just again, like I mentioned from that quote from the Norfolk Southern PR guy, he still recommended that every person does air, soil, and water tests before they return back permanently. So I still think, you know, feel really bad for those nearby citizens. I mean, that's especially with families, I mean, that is a large scale risk that you're possibly taking.
I think I'm unfortunately seeing a repeat in history here. When I first heard about this story, the first thing that came to mind was Flint, Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and especially not being able to drink the water, and that being one of the first things they told residents in Ohio to not do. So I don't know if the government even would step in if there was an issue, like a really big issue, because the government didn't really step in for Flint, Michigan either. So I do hope that everyone that was affected by that does get to safety. I know that a lot of families are going to be stuck there, even if there isn't a health hazard because of economics. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, I do hope that we continue to shine a light on this issue. And hopefully I hope that every place that is impacted by these train derailments with the toxic chemicals, unfortunately, is able to be somewhat have some sort of relief.
Yeah, really do hope so. Again, just hard to trust the government in this day and age, especially with just how you mentioned how Flint, Michigan went probably, what did you say, 5-6 years ago?
I have to pull up the exact date, but yeah, the way that was handled was also quite poor. So I do wonder the economic status of that town that train derailment was in, mm-hmm. because obviously Flint, Michigan was not a very well-to-do place. So I'm interested to see if this economic status is going to be the same, and if that is the difference or the sameness of that going to impact how their actual response is.
Yeah. So that story is currently out on QUmedia.net, just under anything about Quincy University or train derailment, and you should be able to find it. Other than that, we're probably about to wind it down here. So thank you to my co-host, Terrence Sargent, for joining me today. And thank you guys for listening to the QU Podcast. I'm Sam Huff, and this has been a production of the QU Media Podcast Network.